The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Happy Monday to everybody. So glad you're with us today on this eve of the election 2020. I've got a couple of guests on my show today. Welton James is going to be here. Also coming up at the end of the program, at about the 45-minute mark, is an interview with Dave Zanotti. Dave is the host of The Public Square, heard here on The Shepherd. Very excited about both of these. Thank you for being with me. And here we go. It's a joy to be with you every time, every day at this time. And of course, we're on twice a day in the afternoons and also in the evenings for the recap. And we get to talk to people who are newsmakers, people who are either pastors, sometimes people who are like today's guest, in business. And I love that. I love the fact that the Lord has put his heart, his mark, his calling upon people who represent him in the public square, as that old saying goes. And that's what my guest today is all about. I've got a caterer in the name of Welton James. Welton, so great to have you with us.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
You know, you came highly recommended from a mutual friend of ours, John Nasby. Now, John and I have known each other a number of years, and John represents Christian media and stations like The Shepherd, putting people like some of the ministers that we have on our programs on radio stations across the country. How did you get to know this man?
John and I both meet every Saturday morning. We sponsor, mentor a bunch of young men who are in transition. They have an opportunity to spend time in a group home. And if they're successful with that, they don't have to face incarceration.
Mm.
So we get an opportunity to mentor some teenage boys
that would otherwise possibly be going down a track that would not be very fun for them, I'm sure.
Absolutely. At this point, they've already had to stand in front of a judge. Mm-hmm. And this is an alternative sentence for a little bit of time in this group home. Mm. So John, myself, and three other guys, one of the other friends that knows John as well, that was laid on his heart to, first of all, to bring lunch in for these guys. But then he realized, you know, they get plenty of food. What they don't have is Christian men mm-hmm. in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been doing that now for a year and a half, and we're looking to expand that. So
that sounds like an exciting ministry. I've done work before years ago while I lived in Orlando the first time, was a part of an outreach to the juvenile detention center. And that's the same way. Of course, those kids have gotten already not only in trouble before a judge, but already placed in the JDC. And it is a difficult thing. And I'm sure you find some kids that they haven't quite got it all figured out yet, that they're in as much trouble as they're in. So we're praying for you on that outreach.
Well, thank
man.
You, please.
It sounds like an exciting one.
One of the things we found, because we need to bring Christ into their life, but again, it's a secular program. It's a government-sponsored program. And so we found by simply asking them for prayer requests,
mm-hmm.
It's a way that we can bring Christ into the message. Then we started to give a report on them giving us feedback mm-hmm. in terms of the prayer requests to see if there been any changes from week to week. So we get an opportunity to also by promotion, rather than promotion, by telling them what Christ has done in our lives,
mm-hmm.
it gets an opportunity for them to have that introduced.
Oh, that's great. And we wish you the best and success going forward. And John is a great guy, so tell him I said hello.
I promise.
All right, that's great. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Welton. How did you come to know the Lord? Where did you grow up? All of those details.
Well, I was born in 1947. I'm 73, young man.
Yeah, I would never have believed that. You are a young man.
Well, that's because Christ has so much more to do with me.
That's awesome.
But I was born in a coal camp in a place called Affinity, West Virginia. And a coal camp, my father worked in a coal mine. He made $2 a day, six days a week. At the end of the week, he owed $14. Okay. And so that was the coal mine existence. Everything was done by the company store. You got paid in scrip, which looked very similar to a Subway token. The scrip was only redeemable at the company store. So he stood in line. He paid for his pick and shovel and blasting caps and boots, rice and beans. And by the time he settled up, he still was in the hole. Tennessee Ernie Ford had made a famous record about that.
Uh-huh.
You load 16
tons.
What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt.
Isn't that something?
Yes.
Now, what for those that would not be familiar, I love Tennessee Ernie Ford's song. Used to play that actually back in the day, so many years ago. Not when it was a hit, I don't think. I think it was long a hit, but very familiar. But for those that may not be familiar with the concept, how was it that a guy could go to work and work as hard as he did and end up in further in debt?
It was a system. It was almost like an indentured servant. System. The coal mine owned everything. So the shack that you stayed in, and the rice, the beans, everything that your whole that you needed to exist,
mm-hmm.
came from the coal mine.
Okay.
And so when you worked for that system, you got paid by that system. All your goods and services, you got them from the system as well. So.
And it's just amazing to think that after all of that time, they're still farther in debt.
Yes.
You know, that just doesn't seem right. Yes. But that's a part of our American life that a lot of people today not only can't fathom it, they would not even know that it ever had happened that way.
One of the things that was unique about the coal mine is that it was one of the first integrated labor institutions in America. Because blacks and whites both went down in that hole,
mm-hmm.
and worked side by side. Mm-hmm. Now, once they came out, one would turn left and one would turn right for their mm-hmm. own individual shack neighborhoods. But I was actually born at home in that coal mining shack. No running water, no electricity. I was actually delivered by my aunt, who was in the shack next door.
Oh,
and then
goodness.
Once I was born, and the local doctor from up in town came down and made sure that I was okay. So.
That is an amazing story. And this is a first for me. I've never interviewed anyone who came from that kind of a background during that time frame and had that as a birthplace.
Yes.
And that was in West Virginia.
In Beckley. Well, right outside of Beckley, called Affinity. And Affinity means kinship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so everybody was in the same boat. If my father, for example, decided on Monday morning he didn't feel like going to work, a guy would come up to the house with a 36-inch hickory axe handle and check on my father. And if he didn't feel as though he was sick enough, he was told either go to work or get out of his house.
Oh my goodness!
There you go. Now my mother had an asthmatic condition, and so she stayed sick. And as a result, she would sneak off and do what was called housework, would be called day's work.
Mm-hmm.
She saved the money. My aunt would cover for her. And then at some point, the houses that she used to clean, that lady owned several of them. My mom then made arrangements to put money aside to rent one of those houses. And then when she was ready, we got out of the coal mine.
And that's how you broke out of it.
That's how we got out of it. My mother was very industrious. Originally from Deland, Florida, my father met her on the way to World War II. He was a supply sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was helped loading ships and things here in the Orlando area. Then once he came back from the war, got my mother, took her to West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
When my mother, her illness made it so that we had to get out of that environment. We left West Virginia and moved to New Jersey. Mm. My mother went to New Jersey every summer as a little kid, but we had to move in not all at once. My father had, when you work in a coal mine, you're always getting hurt. Coal is always falling from the top.
Mm-hmm.
You break your back. My father broke his back, fractured skull. So my father was on disability. We moved to New Jersey. First, my mother went, stayed a year, came back, got my two sisters. They stayed a year, came back, got my brother and myself. stayed a year, and then the fourth year, my father came.
He was able to join.
And so then that's what it took for us all to all come together.
Now, my grandfather worked in the coal mines in Kentucky.
Okay.
Down central Kentucky, not western or eastern, and suffered greatly himself, but from a disease called black lung disease. Was that prevalent?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was the equivalent of smoking probably two cartons of cigarettes a day. I mean, no one went in a coal mine that didn't get black lung. Mm. And so, yeah, that was when my father finally got his total disability. He got it as a result of black lung as well as a broken back. So he could no longer work.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole family then went to New Jersey.
How old was he when they made that move?
Well, I remember my age.
Okay.
I was around 12.
Okay.
I was a precocious little kid, so I had actually been advanced a year. In the coal mine in the area, there was a one-room school. So as a result, there would be several grades in that one classroom. The teacher, like me, took me along before I was old enough to go to school. So by the time I was ready to start regular school, I'd already had the first grade. So I started regular school in the second grade.
Mm-hmm.
So at 13, I actually went in New Jersey. I went to high school, and you know, that's how I first got connected to, you know, there.
How about your relationship with the Lord?
Didn't have one at the time. One of the things that was prevalent in the in a lot of neighborhoods is the preacher and the undertaker were the two people in town, black community, that had Cadillacs. Very few people begrudged the undertaker his Cadillac.
Mm-hmm.
But my father always felt that the preacher was living off the backs of the people. This particular one that was very famous in my area was a womanizer. And as a result, he used to visit the homes on Sunday. They would cook a big dinner for him, and the kids would have to eat last. My father just didn't like nothing to do with that whatsoever. So as a result, we went to church for little things like vacation Bible school and Cub Scouts and things of that sort. But on Sunday, we didn't go. When I moved to New Jersey, I didn't have a relationship, but there was a priest that had a big church on a corner, empty all week because of what they call white flight, empty all week. He walked the neighborhood to get the kids off the street. So you guys don't have to join a church, but we can have some activities here. We formed the club. The guys formed the club. We called ourselves the Saints and Sinners. And so he was very instrumental in being a symbol. I was attracted to that, and as a result, went through a whole process and joined that particular church. But I didn't have a personal relationship with the Lord at that time. It took quite a while. Alcoholism, drug addiction, street life, a lot of that. In September 1984. Was my last day of a drink and a drug. That morning, I asked God to save me. I didn't ask him to come into my life, but I asked him directly, if you're there, you know, get me out of this merry-go-round that I'm on.
Mm.
And that kind of started my journey. First, it came sobriety. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, they teach you about a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily one that you would identify. You are allowed to identify it in your own way. I worshiped the Book of Knowledge at that point. Great works of people who were very very popular and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have a personal relationship until my father-in-law happened to visit. My father-in-law had been a very famous missionary. At some point, his mission was sponsored by the Southern Baptist. He was a Chinese seaman's ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to us, do you go to church? And I said, well, you know, sometimes. And he said, do you think it's important? I said, yes. He said, well, if you don't go to church, then what you're doing is you're actually saying to your children, it's really not that important. Now, there's one down the street, and I know the pastor. And we started to go to that church. And something happened when I went to that church. The people were the same. The message was the same. What was different was me. And at that point, it was as if my life changed again. Mm-hmm. It changed September the 15th, 1984, when I put down the drink and I put down the drug. And then it happened to me again. But this time, God spoke to me and said, welcome home.
Oh, that's wonderful. Isn't it great to see a life turned around? And you're right. None of us can do that all by ourselves. We can't save ourselves. We need a Savior.
Absolutely.
The good news is there is a Savior.
Yes.
And you found that Savior. He called you.
Yeah. I tell people, I found God. He wasn't lost. But I found him.
Yeah, that's right. That's good. I am talking today to Welton James, and in a moment we're going to hear about Welton's work in Orlando. But tell us, how did you get from up there down to Florida?
Well, you know, there are a lot of things that sometimes come together. I don't believe in coincidence. Sometimes God acts and remains anonymous, but I don't believe in coincidence. And a whole series of events started to take place once I got sober. One of which is I got an opportunity to reconnect with that priest who took an interest in me as a very young man, as a 12, 13-year-old. That priest, by the way, took his collar off and went to law school. Because every time he would try to help the poor at City Hall, they would rebuke him and say, you know, you go save their souls, Father. Mm-hmm. We'll take care of the business.
We'll deal with their life. You save their souls.
Yeah. So he took his collar off and went to law school and really became a thorn in the city side and did a lot of great things. But around 1980... Well, actually, it was around 2000. I got sick. I got hepatitis C. The company I worked for, I was executive director of quality assurance for Tropicana Hotel Casino at the time. And I told the boss I was going home. And she said to me, go home and get well. Your paycheck will be in the bank every Monday for the next year. And for that year, I was at home. My wife would get up, go to work. The kids would go to school. I realized that this brain of mine was not a transmitter. It was a receiver. And we visited her mother in Florida. And on the way back, it hit both of us at the same time. What are we going back to? Mm-hmm. We're going back to jobs. Jobs are anywhere. Mm-hmm. But we're going back to a godless neighborhood. And we said, if it's God's will for us, we're going to be where you'll be with your mother. And I'm home all day, so I'm on the internet, and I started to look at real estate. I'm starting to look at all these various things. It became a fairy tale. I mean, everything just came together all at mm-hmm. one time. And I went back to the boss who had paid me $85,000 for that year. And I had to tell her now that I'm not coming back. So I've stuck my hand in the Bible just to find me something to comfort me. And it ended up being in Deuteronomy. And he says, I will go before you. I will go ahead of you. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I felt a peace. And sure enough, when I went to tell her I was not coming back, she said, if God tells you to do something, you better go do it. You don't owe anyone anything here.
Wow.
Just give us a couple of days so you get an opportunity to say goodbye to all the people who care about you and all the people that you have helped. And so I spent a day and a half at work just saying goodbye to people. And we packed our bags and we ended up in Florida.
Wow. That's an amazing story. And you have been the recipient of amazing grace, Welton.
Yes, I have.
Welton James, my guest. We're going to be back with Welton coming up in just a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're right here on The Shepherd. Back again today with Welton James in the studio here at The Shepherd. And it's on the eve of the presidential election. What a day this will be. And without a doubt, what a week this is going to be. But in the meantime, we have a little bit of a breather here, talking about the things of God in Welton's life, his background, growing up. God delivered you from a really difficult life. Your dad, who worked in those coal mines in West Virginia, I think a lot of people would not even believe just how hard that work is. Number one, they're doing, like you said, back-breaking, literal in his case, back-breaking work where the coal would often fall down and hit and obstruct and injure, and in his case, broke his back. But then on top of that, you're dealing with an atmosphere down low with that coal dust being as prevalent as it is. And I wasn't aware that so many got the disease, but you're saying that a lot of people, if not most of the people, ended up with black lung disease.
Well, it was common knowledge. If you went in a coal mine, you had black lung. It was just that simple. Now, one of the things about the coal mine is that because the economy was so tied into coal mine, and it still is to a large degree in West Virginia, if you went into the coal mine and got what they call the heebie-jeebies, if you got very nervous and whatever, so that you would not affect the other men, you could always come out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to imagine going into a hole in the ground, maybe 200 feet down in a city hall in Orlando, and then getting on a little buggy and riding all the way to Mount Dora underwater, underground, before you'd actually get off and start work.
Oh.
So it's deep and long.
Long?
Yes, down in
that
down
far
in
from Orlando to Mount Dora.
Yes, you could ride for 20, 30 miles underground in one of those seams of coal.
So. Oh, that is amazing. There's a lot about that I know I don't know, and I bet our listeners would be in the same boat. But thank God, God delivered you. God brought you to himself. He moved you to Florida, and you're now down here in Florida. Were you always a one that was at home when it came to cooking, when it came to preparing food?
Well, actually, I'm a caterer, but I'm a caterer sales man.
Okay, so you're not the cook yourself.
No, I'm the worst person you could ever have.
Okay.
My wife doesn't allow me in the kitchen.
All right, now I would not have seen that one coming as a caterer.
No, I'm actually a caterer for a Mexican restaurant chain called Qdoba Mexican Eats.
Okay.
So I sell to large groups, small groups, special events, lunches, doctor's offices. As you can imagine right now, there are very few people getting together in groups of 10 and 20 to have a lunch with mm-hmm. a lot of strangers. So my business dropped about 95%.
Well, I know it's been impacting on restaurants across the board, and catering would have to be the same thing, because the whole industry of conventions, meetings has really, if not completely shut down, like you said, very close to it. 95%, that's a pretty great number.
It is. It's tremendous. I'm very fortunate. Again, God continues to work in my life. At a job fair, needing a job, I saw someone that I thought I recognized, and I asked him, where did I know him from? And finally, I recognized that I knew him from church. I asked him what he was looking for at that job fair, and he said he was interested in food and beverage workers. So I basically told him he could leave me out of that. But we had a conversation, and as a result of that conversation, as God would have it, we went from limitations to possibilities.
Okay.
It ended up, he gave me an opportunity to work. I was horrible in the management track to run a restaurant, but I saw someone one day leave with a bag, and I found out that was catering. I convinced him to give me an opportunity to do that. And then 10 years later, I'm his catering manager.
Oh my goodness.
Now, because of our relationship and my work ethic and how God has blessed me, even though the business has dropped dramatically, he felt that I still had value for the company. So I've been doing Zoom calls for all of the employees to deal with our culture, our values as a company, to reinforce our customer service standards to all the employees.
Oh, that's great, Welton. Congratulations. And that's a great example of making lemonade from lemons.
Absolutely.
when they're tossed your way.
Yeah.
And so many people have been able to find new avenues of resource, of income during this most difficult pandemic. Do you see any change in this?
I don't see it changing drastically for at least to the first of the year. One of the things that happens is things change. We had a candle, and then we got the light bulb. Mm-hmm. Now, the candle didn't go away, but we stopped using the candle for light. So there will be a change in how catering is done. There are new things. There are a lot of things that are happening where people pick up food, third-party delivery services, your Uber Eats, and things of that sort. So there will be a change.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we don't know exactly how it will change, but we'll be ready once it does. So I'm very fortunate that they care enough about me to keep me gainfully employed during this period of time and finding something new for me to do.
Now, you mentioned you're 73 years old.
Yes.
Has retirement. Is that ever something you think about?
Yes, I'm halfway there. I'm tired. Okay.
Okay.
But no, I don't see a lot of instances where God retires people that he considers to still have value. When God retires you, you're done.
That's okay. I like what you said. You're halfway there.
Yes. Actually, I'm getting ready to start a new career probably in December. There's a pastor named John Maxwell who has the John Maxwell Group.
Sure.
I got my certification at the John Maxwell Institute for coaching and public speaking and things of that sort. So I have that on the side. My book comes out in December. Originally, it was supposed to be called You Trust Your Mother, But You Still Count Your Change. But
that's a great title.
But it's with Higher Life Publishing, which is a Christian publishing company.
Yes.
We decided if that book was sitting.
David Wilday.
Yes.
Yes.
A great guy.
Yeah.
If that book was sitting on a shelf, people walking by would not know what it was about. But over the last 30 years, I have a way of speaking. And sometimes it comes out in colloquial sayings and things similar to Proverbs. People would call them wealthnisms. And they would say, you should write a book. Well, I did an interview with the leader of Forge, Reverend Pete.
Pete Allinson, who's a regular on this program.
And he said to me, you should write a book. I laughed. I said, I've been writing that book for 30 years. He said, but I have a publisher.
Uh-huh.
He put the two of us together. And it was decided that maybe I have a great story about my life. But if I was Brad Pitt, people would buy it just to see what's in it. But the quotes themselves would stand alone. And so we decided to go with the quotes. It's called Weltonisms, Ancient Wisdom for Modern Problems. It should be out in December.
Oh, that's a great title too. And it does ring very personally to you, and that's wonderful. So you mentioned Pete. Now, Pete is a great guy, and you talk about a bastion of wisdom. This guy, every time he's here, I just feel like, man, I've been really impacted, and I love the way he has a heart for God. He has a heart for theology. He has a heart for people. And he has this men's ministry called The Forge, and you are a part of that.
Yes. Forge is about making great men as God sees greatness.
Mm-hmm.
We meet together on Thursday mornings, and it's just a great time. Iron sharpening iron. It's just a great ministry. And Pete's what you call a straight shooter. Highly intelligent, but also a caring individual, and so it's a great way to spend my Thursday mornings.
Mm. Okay. So tell me a little bit about that. I've not been to one of the Forge meetings. What is the makeup of the whole meeting?
The makeup is it's about breaking down the Bible, so that modern man can be a warrior as God had intended him to be. To keep some balance in their life. But at mm-hmm. the same time, you know, Adam was first. And so God picked a man to do certain things that he did not expect a woman to do. Man is expected to be a leader in his home, in his neighborhood, in his country. And we get twisted. You know, one of the things that happened in my life, something I never thought I would do, is I had to turn off the news. News stands for North, East, West, and South. And so in the old days, we used to get information from the North, East, West, and South. But then after John F. Kennedy was killed, news then became entertainment, unfortunately, and it's been entertainment ever since. Mm-hmm. And so I had to turn that off. So we have to come together as men with the basis of the Bible being the foundation and learn how men are expected to act, how greatness is defined as God defines greatness. So it's a great, great, great time for men to be together.
Now, you had mentioned that the makeup of this new book that you're writing has been colloquialisms that you have brought out, or Weltonisms, as you said, and will be the title of the book. At what point in your life did you come to realize that you were one who would use these kinds of sayings that might be like almost modern day proverbs? What was that like back then?
Well, as a little kid, we were taught to respect the older people. Well, when the older people would call us, the other kids would run, but I found that to be disrespectful. So I would come and sit with them and listen to them repeat themselves 100 times and call me by my brother's name. And but they had a way of communicating through these proverbs and colloquial sayings, and had a way of teaching, and it became very memorable. It became a part of my life. And it, over a period of time, the gift of communication has always been something that's been mine. It was my father's. They used to call it the gift of gab. And but I wanted to make sure that my message always was reaching people. And sometimes people who teach will take the simple and make it complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a way of taking the complicated
and making it
and
simple.
Making it simple.
Okay. That's great. And you're so good at it. And it's wonderful that this has happened. Now, the John Maxwell public speaking thing, that in itself is another kind of lane into communications. What do you see that looking like for the future for you?
When I worked at Tropicana Hotel Casino for about 15 years, I was responsible for coordinating the customer service direction for the company. So I had to do quite a bit of speaking to the employees, the directorship, as well as the executive committee. Now, once God saved me from the life of drugs and alcohol, I started to then be involved in carrying that message as well through speaking to small groups. And I have a jail ministry that I'm involved in. It's called the Good News Ministry. It's a chaplain run program at the Seminole County Jail.
Mm-hmm.
At my church, and it's called Cross Life Church, used to be known as First Baptist of Oviedo, I was asked to take over the Celebrate Recovery ministry. And so I'm the Celebrate Recovery ministry for Cross Life Church. I've been doing that for a while. And so as I transitioned out of the sales and marketing on the Mexican restaurant side, again, continuing to make a contribution, the John Maxwell curriculum, okay, Christian base, will give me an opportunity to continue to reach people. You know, I think Buford wrote a book called Halftime. And so we spend the first half of our life trying to make a living. Well, we should spend at least the next half trying to make a difference.
I like that. That's one of those phrases right there. Write that down if you haven't already. That's awesome. My guest today has been Welton James, and Welton is from the Orlando area and a caterer, although I have to say, even though I knew that, I instantly thought you were doing the more of the cooking type of catering, but I can see now that you really have this gift of gab that you're talking about. And so you're selling the food and arranging for it. And now God is using you in a whole new way as well. And I just wish you the very best in this post-pandemic. We're not there yet to be able to say post-pandemic,
yes,
but I'm believing one day we will. Whatever the new normal looks like, Welton, I wish
you the
best.
I'm not afraid. You know, I'm not afraid. I'm careful and I'm prudent, but I'm not afraid. I've been to hell, and this is not it. You know, I want to leave you with this first sermon that I heard when I moved here. A woman woke up from a nightmare, and Christ was standing at the head of her bed. He said, "What's the matter, my child?" She says, "I just saw the devil." He said, "No, that was me. She said, no, Lord, I just saw Satan. I said, no, child, that was me. She said, I don't want to argue with you, Lord, but I just saw the devil himself. He said, that's the face of me that people see in you. Mm. Well, that stuck with me. And so as I live my life, what is the faith of Christ do people see in me?
Mm.
Not my learning, not my knowledge, not my works. What is the face of Christ do people see in me? That's my responsibility. That's my mission. And I'm having a great time.
Well, that's wonderful. And it shows. Welton James, thank you for being on my program. And friends, I'll be back in a moment. We have Dave Zanotti from the Public Square, and he's going to be with us for a moment. And we'll be talking about things that are facing us, our nation, in a big way tomorrow. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're in tune to the Shepherd Radio Network. We're back again here on Afternoons with Mike, and joining me once again on the line, Dave Zanotti, this time talking to me from the Tennessee area.
Mike, our Tennessee office, we're blessed to have offices, as you know, in Orlando, Tennessee, and in the greater Cleveland area, in Valley City, where the American Mission Center is getting ready to be completed and opened. And after 40 years, we're thrilled to be able to run this lovely line of friends and relationships and operations from the Great Lakes of the Florida Keys.
Well, I tell you what, I can't wait for the time that you're going to be able to be here live in our studio with us. And I know that that day is coming soon, and I'm excited about that. But boy, oh boy, our time is short. We've got more to talk about. I have to open up, Dave, by saying that your show has just blessed the socks off my wife and me. We love listening to the banter of the table, the public square. The things you guys have brought up are talking points for all who listen. And I just want to say to you, thank you for being such a great resource and a great source for what I consider to be biblically informed. And not only that, but historically informed. And those two things don't often ride next to each other in the carriage of life as we know it in this day, man. So thank you for bringing both of those things to us.
Mike, I'm overwhelmed by your compliment. Thank you. And the team that we have surrounded ourselves with at the Public Square is a group of career professionals that are first and foremost missionaries.
Mm.
They're true believers in the true truth of the revelation of God in the person of Jesus Christ. And they've also served for a lifetime in the arena of public policy. So they have real dirt under their fingernails. And so they care immensely about what's going on in the states, what's going on in local communities, and what's going on in our nation in Washington, D.C. So I'm surrounded by wonderful people who meet on a regular basis, have known each other for all their lives, and who actually care about one another. So it's a wonderful task, and we couldn't do it without stations like yours, without support like yours. So thank you.
Well, you're certainly welcome, and you're a blessing to the Shepherd listeners, whether they be in Gainesville, Ocala, or Orlando, or any of our many communities that are bedroom to those three main cities that I've just mentioned right there. And we all love the whole team and just the viewpoint that you bring. It's the heart and soul of what this program is all about, and I really appreciate it. I had a great conversation. I don't know if you've had the chance to meet Matt Staver personally or not from the Liberty Council.
Yes.
Yeah, he is mm-hmm. such a fine guy, and he's right here in this area too and is regularly on my program. And he has an interesting, I thought, jumping off point for the two of us today. This election, we all know, we both know, this thing could go down in many different ways. It most likely is going to go down to something that won't be able to be called on at the end of tomorrow night. Now, I would like to think that could be different, but there's many people who believe, and I don't know where you are exactly on what, if you had to guess, do you think that we'll have a clear winner by the end of the evening tomorrow night? Let's start with that.
Well, sure. And let's start with the fact that we're asking that question from ground zero, where you all are sitting at the heart of the I-4 corridor. Your stations and your network of stations are in the most pivotal ground right now in regards to this national election. And so the first question is, what's going to happen in Florida? Now, the inside data. And there's always the polling numbers that happened on television, but then there's the real numbers of what people who are taking good amounts of money, to be honest, behind the scenes, know. And right now, it looks like Florida is going to be won by Donald Trump. Now, no one can be sure, and no one should alter their behavior based on that kind of analysis. But that's what the inside scoop is saying. And if, in fact, that happens, then that means that the race is going to be competitive. If, in fact, Ohio goes for Trump again, then the race is going to be exceptionally competitive. And now we're triggered into a mechanism where the states of Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Arizona, and Minnesota become into play. So it becomes a chase from there, Mike, for five or six states. So that all being said, that's the normal plan. We could get out of election night with an early call if the president wins Michigan and Wisconsin. It's very possible that we come out with an early call and Donald Trump is president of the United States. It could happen just that way. The real game that's coming down now, however, is what happens if Pennsylvania is frozen off the map.
Yes.
And the likelihood of that happening is growing higher by the moment. What we saw on Sunday night was the Secretary of State making a statement saying that there's going to be a delay. Now, of course, you know, because we're on your station with the public square. For weeks, we've been holding policy briefings and radio broadcasting explaining how this delayed vote count is going to impact and how it could become a strong strategy for either side to stop the election process and throw the election into an uncountable situation where it takes so long that the election becomes not qualified. And then we go into a whole civics lesson on the 12th Amendment, the 20th Amendment, and all of that. That game is in play. Why? Because the Secretary of State has notified us on Sunday night that Pennsylvania is going to be delayed, and the mayor of Philadelphia came out on Monday morning saying the very same thing. And when the mayor gets involved, now you've gone past preaching to meddling. And now you're in a position where the politicization of this, the weaponization of it, is beginning. So you can see the trap being laid to freeze Pennsylvania. If, in fact, the president does not win Wisconsin or Michigan and it comes down to needing Pennsylvania for reelect, then there's a very good possibility that if the internal numbers on Pennsylvania look like Donald Trump's going to win, that the other side will create so many forms of legal challenge that they work to their final game plan, which is to decertify the election or disqualify the election and not permit Donald Trump to be elected. Now, this is not radical conspiracy. We've been saying it for weeks. It's been affirmed by our best lawyers and law school professors from around the country. We know this isn't even partisan. This is just politics and the way the law works, Mike. So if we don't get a good read on everything but Pennsylvania, then chances are we may be weeks before we know, and we may be into what one of the parties would call Plan B.
Now, what I was bringing up Matt Staver for, Matt had an interesting thought, and he said that in his mind, what would happen, all of these delays, all of these deadline extensions that have been put out in states like North Carolina and in Pennsylvania, those two states in particular, I think North Carolina, what is it, 12 days or something that they have? On the counting of the ballots. So when you look at it that way, he would believe that those extensions are not constitutional and may well be quickly taken all the way up to the Supreme Court and then decided and could actually end up on all of those votes happening after that, not being counted on election night to be actually disqualified themselves. So do you see that as a possible scenario?
Well, I think right now you'll see tonight, you'll know by tonight as the lawyers start to roll out on the evening cable shows. And then by tomorrow night, if we've got more lawyers than we have results, you know that everything's in play. Mike, there are so many, we have 50 laws, 50 states, 50 sets of laws, and 50 moving puzzle pieces all at the same time. All the polling places, all the precincts, anywhere this election is moving, there can be a challenge. There can be automatic recounts. There can be challenges of polling places. There could be charges of voter suppression. There could be lost ballots. There are all kinds of inconsistencies that can be exploited. It all depends on how the volume of voting is counted. Tomorrow night, we'll have a read on where they go. If we do not have a clear winner, and it's clear that neither side is conceding the election on election night, it's probably going to be a long haul.
I'll tell you what, I remember that long haul in 2000, and that was not pretty, and it came down to, 575 votes?
537.
537 votes, and those votes being cast right here in the good old Sunshine State made the difference. When Catherine Harris actually certified those, it was all over, but my goodness, what an ordeal that was.
You remember coming home night after night after night wondering what happened today.
Yeah.
And this will be far more complicated because this is not going to be a question of hanging chads and butterfly ballots and an inability to know the intention of the voters. This strategy, it may devolve into minute crises, cases like that, but it could just really be frozen based on the ability to get an accurate count, then the necessity of a recount. And there's only 78 days from tomorrow until the time when Congress must decide that the certification of this election is real or not. Mm-hmm. And that's not a lot of time when you're talking about challenges. I mean, what lawsuit can possibly be executed in less than a week? And that is almost near impossible, or more like 30 days. So how many challenges divided by 78 days does it take to keep the election from being finalized? This is the possibility if it's extremely close.
Oh, I tell you what, that kind of analysis right there is why I love you guys so very much. That is so helpful to hear. Now, in the time remaining today, I'd love to have posed this question to you. It came out a couple of days ago. Frank Luntz, who is used often on the Fox News Network as a polling expert and a leader in modern-day polling, made this prediction. He said that if Donald Trump wins this election, and all of these polls that have been out now for weeks and months even, pointing a landslide almost victory for Biden, if that's not true, he made the statement that he thinks polling is over, that industry is done. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think polling is actually more like Night of the Living Dead right now, because the business model for polling doesn't work anymore.
It doesn't.
30 years ago, you and I can remember a time in which the media did not buy polls and then use their purchased product as the lead story on their news broadcasts and telecasts. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the way things used to work. There were independent polling companies, and they were viewed as trustworthy. Today, there's no separation between the polling company and the media outlets, and so people don't trust polling any more than they trust the media. So for a poll to work, you have to have the fundamental operational reality that people trust giving their opinion to someone who is going to correctly and anonymously amass that information for the public good. That credibility is gone. And because it's gone, I don't think that business model can ever recover, because people don't trust pollsters. So they either don't answer the call, or they won't tell people the truth if they do.
You know, I think that's it. I think that last point is what happened the first time in 2016, when people were telling the pollsters, and maybe even on the day of the election as well, the exit polls, they were telling them that they voted for Hillary Clinton, when indeed they had actually voted for Donald Trump. And the motivation why they did that, it wasn't that they were just trying to be wise guys or whatever. There was fear. And that
it's only worse now.
Oh, my goodness. When you look at our country burning, cities burning the way they're doing. And then, Dave, when you wake up this morning and you see these images of major cities boarding up all of their downtown areas in anticipation of what's going to happen tomorrow night, tell me that's not fodder for fear.
And let us say that God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of love, power, and a sound mind. Our country is bigger than who we elect for president of the United States. This is a civil government where we all can pray for those in authority over us. And there is another election coming, always in our constitutional form of government. And so the wasted energy toward violence and all of that stuff is nothing but wasted energy, because immediately on midnight tomorrow, the clock starts for the next election. And that's what the framers saw. That's why they created a system of frequent elections to permit factions of great passion to be able to work toward change and not toward revolution. And that's where the spirit of Christ within us and the spirit of reconciliation and patience and grace and love needs to overwhelm this process, Mike.
That's wonderful. I agree. How good it is to remember that God is a sovereign God and he's going to be in control one way or the other. And I saw a quote that it said, we have to remember two things, that we are not in control, and that, number two, the world is not out of control. I think those are two things to remember as we go into this final day and watch what happens. Watch it as it unfolds. Last time in 2016, Dave, I stayed up all night. I'm not sure I'm willing to do that maybe this year, because if I waited until an election was called before I go to sleep this year, I might break some sleep deprivation records. It could be
well,
crazy.
Hopefully we'll have a call for you before then, Mike. We'll do our best.
I'm hoping so, too. Hey, I always enjoy talking with you, Dave, and thank you for all that you've brought to us here today. It's certainly a lot to think about, and more importantly, it's a lot to pray about.
Thanks, Mike. And for those who are still looking at going to vote, you can still take a look at iVoters.com. It'll help you out specifically in Florida on the ballot issues you're facing as well.
That's right. And also our friend John Stimberger over at Florida Family Policy Council has some great resources there as well. So Dave Zanotti, I look forward to checking back in, hopefully as early as tomorrow with you. And we'll see how this thing shakes out. We'll have to keep an eye on those counts of attorneys, as you have said, on all of the news programs tonight. And we'll get a better feel on this maybe in about 24 hours. So God bless you, Dave Zanotti.
Thanks, Mike. Talk soon.
Okay. God bless. So there you have it, friends. Thank you for being with me today. Tomorrow is the day. Be sure and vote. Don't miss this great opportunity and the great responsibility that goes with our privileges. We'll see you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.